And right now, BT, like, it was fun to talk to Triple H. He probably knows nothing about baseball. Fun to talk to Cody Rhodes. Also, minimal baseball knowledge. Right now, we get the voice of the WWE in studio, Michael Cole, who is a legitimate Mets fan. Let's start there, Michael. First of all, thanks for coming in.
BT, thanks, guys. It's
a pleasure to have you on the show with us. What are your thoughts? Mets trade deadline moves.
So, bittersweet. I think Stearns did an unbelievable job with the bullpen. I think we may have the best bullpen in baseball. We'll see how it plays out. I mean, you could conceivably go to the bullpen in the fourth inning every day if you wanted to.
They might have to with the way the starters are going.
Exactly, right? But we didn't give up anybody, which I loved. The problem is now we can lose games 2-0. We still can't hit. We didn't get anybody to help the offense. Mullins isn't the answer, in my opinion. We just have to hope that Pete and Lindor start to hit, and they've been terrible for 2 months, but we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, he's dialed in, man. Although, I might have to correct you a little bit. Best bullpen in baseball. I'm not even sure he got the best bullpen in New York City.
Oh, here we go. I know. I figured I'd hear it from the Yankees. Guys. Hey, Yankees did well in the bullpen, too. Come on, I'll give you that.
But I think both teams did well. What was your first earliest Mets memory?
So, it was great. I grew up in Poughkeepsie, and my dad had season tickets in the 70s. I spent 50 games a year in the 1970s when they absolutely sucked.
So, yeah, they were bad.
Yeah, they were terrible. And so, you know, when they finally started to get good, when Hernandez got traded over, I think my favorite season, even up till this day, was 1985. Because that was the year that the Mets finally arrived, and we knew that they were going to be good for a number of years. The kids were coming in.
Got Gary Carter that year.
Yep, exactly. You know, Keith, obviously the man, Dwight and Daryl. So to me, 85 was my favorite season. 2000, I was there. I took my son to his first World Series, Game 5.
Tough night for the kid,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, it was. We got beat on our home turf, thanks to you guys. But, you know, in the Cespedes deal in 2015, listen, I'm just a massive Mets fan. I watch every single game. I told a story on the Mets podcast this week about actually having my phone on the desk during Monday Night Raw on Mondays with the sound down and the game on. So I watch it. I watch every game. It's pretty cool.
But what if somebody like gets slammed into the table?
Well, that's why I have an OtterBox on my phone.
We're in studio with Michael Cole at SummerSlam. Of course, first ever two-night SummerSlam taking place Saturday, Sunday, MetLife Stadium. You like the two-night event? For you, it's going to be a lot of extra work. You got Friday night SmackDown, you got Monday night Raw, and obviously the two nights with SummerSlam.
I love the two-night format, especially for our big shows, WrestleMania and SummerSlam, because we were getting to the point on these big shows where we were going 5, 6, sometimes 7 hours, right? That is viewer fatigue. And I think now we're able to get more of our talent on the cards. We can keep the shows to 3.5 to 4 hours. And, you know, we have 2 main events each and every night. And I actually say 4 main events because I think the 2 matches that kick off the show and the 2 matches that end the show are our main events. So I love the 2-night format. And the thing with like SummerSlam and WrestleMania is our fans have turned it into vacation destinations.
Yeah.
They show up in Vegas for a week. They show up in New York for a week. The hotel that I'm at has a big wrestling convention this weekend. There's fans from all over the place. So I think it's really cool to have these type of events. And it's not just Saturday and Sunday. Tonight we're in Newark for SmackDown. Monday we're in Brooklyn for Monday Night Raw. So we've made a whole 4 days of it.
It's amazing. So how do you prep for this? I mean, you know, talk about them as a Mets fan, Gary Cohen's got his notes, the opposition, the stats, the average. How do you prepare to call a match or matches?
So the interesting thing, BT, and I tell everybody this all the time, is that I'm not just a play-by-play guy. When you're a play-by-play guy in sports, you react. And I remember having a conversation a number of years ago with Joe Buck. Mm-hmm. And Joe was at one of our WrestleManias. And he told me, I can't do what you can do. Because the issue is that we're reacting, but we're acting. Because for the most part, we know how it's going to play out. So we have to be actors as we react to these things. So even though we know that something may happen, we need to be surprised in that moment. We're also storytellers, we're narrators, we have to be involved in character development, and we're also, you know, shills, for lack of a better term. You know, we have a lot of sponsors that we have to get in and we have to take care of. So I wear many hats. So my day preparing for a show is heavily involved in who are our sponsors, because you never want to get those reads wrong. They're paying a lot of money. What are our stories? Where are we going to go after SummerSlam? How do we lead the audience in certain directions? And I have a great team back in Stanford that helps me put statistics together, because I don't remember sometimes what happened on last week's show, let alone what happened in SummerSlam 20 years ago. So I need that team to help
out. There are certain things. I'm learning this. We talked about it. We had Cody on yesterday and Triple H on the day before. And I've been watching the Unreal show on Netflix, which is just fantastic.
I watched it last night, Sal. It's phenomenal.
How good, BT? And how many episodes? You saw the first episode?
First one. Awesome.
Dude, it's so good. It gets even better.
It's good.
And there are parts, Michael, where we see you backstage and Gorilla talking about things. So did you not know Cena was turning heel, or is that a little bit of a work?
No, I did not know. There's been a couple of instances over the years where I did not know what was going to happen. The night that Brock Lesnar beat The Undertaker to end The Undertaker's undefeated streak at WrestleMania, I did not know that was going to happen. The John Cena situation, did not know that's going was going to happen. And as Triple H said in the Unreal documentary, there was a very small circle of people who knew. So my reaction that you got that night was genuine, because John and I have been friends for 30 years, and I have been the voice of his entire run here. And he was the biggest babyface, biggest good guy in the history of our business. And for that to happen on that night and the way that it played out, in a million years, I never saw it coming. So all of my emotion and all of my reaction was real. And that's sometimes where it's cool that you don't know what's going to go on.
That's great.
Hey, and by the way, I got a question for you. So, as we said, Triple H was with us in studio, and Sal and I both love wrestling. You know, maybe if Triple H ever writes us into the script, who's the heel? Is it me or is it Sal?
BT.
Yeah, without hesitation, BT.
Really?
Stick up for each other.
No doubt you're a Yankees guy.
Really? BT and Sal, the fan here. Of course, SummerSlam, two-night event taking place this Saturday, Sunday, MetLife Stadium. Is there a particular match that you're looking forward to? And then do you get fatigued? Like, you talk about it, you're doing a lot of work here. Both nights, fatigued. And the main event is going to be taking place, I'm assuming, the last match on Sunday, the Cena match with Rhodes. But is there one match you're looking forward to?
Well, so for the fatigue factor, yes. Both physically and mentally, because obviously mentally, because you have to be locked in for 4 hours at a very high level. We don't have a lot of ebbs and flows in our shows. You want to be as excited about every single match on the card, because you don't want to do a disservice to any of the superstars. So you're at a very high level. So mentally and physically, it wears on you. But from a match standpoint, I'm looking forward, obviously, to Cena Rhodes. It's Cena's last SummerSlam, as he's in the middle of his retirement tour. I'm interested to see how that plays out. I'm really excited for the women on Sunday. Io Sky, Rhea Ripley, and Naomi for the World Championship. That's going to be an incredible match. And obviously CM Punk and Gunther, which will main event Saturday night for the World Championship, is going to be very interesting. Gunther has a lot to prove. This is probably the biggest match of his career. And Punk hasn't had a title since he's come back.
You know what's happening already or no?
No, I don't.
You'll find out tomorrow.
I'll meet probably with Triple H at some point during the day, and I'll basically say to him, what do I need to know? And he'll fill me in on the things that the beats that I need to get into. Mm-hmm. But I may not know all the finishes heading into the weekend.
Would you ever respectfully say, and it's a delicate balance, obviously, with the creative team, when you find out what's going on, will you ever intimate, like, I don't know, is that going to work? Like, will you just keep that to yourself, or will you be honest with them?
So for the most part, I would keep it to myself. Listen, the creative team we have, they're kicking out 3 television shows a week, 52 weeks a year. And then you put premium live events on top of that. They're an incredible team. They do great work. Obviously, I'm not going to agree with every story that they put out there. The fans aren't going to agree with every story, but they work their butts off. And, it's just like being an announcer. That's my lane. And I don't need people coming up to me and saying, hey, do this way, do it that way. I have my own style of doing things. They don't need to hear from me. They know what they're doing. But, at the most part, they put together some pretty compelling stories since Triple H has been charged over the last 3 years.
BT and Sal in studio here with Michael Cole ahead of SummerSlam MetLife Stadium. First ever 2-night SummerSlam this Saturday and Sunday. You mentioned Triple H, of course, and the staff that they have to put together. Do you yourself, when you're going in there each and every single night and you feel like the company, you've been there how long, 30 years?
Almost 30, 28.
Okay. We talked about this with him a little bit. Do you think that this is the healthiest that the company has ever been?
Yes, 100%, for so many different reasons. And again, I'll never disparage the old regime, because I wouldn't be here today without them, right? But it's a different world now. I think the superstars, the talent, have much more input into what they're going to say during their promos in the ring. They have much more input into their stories and also into their matches, a lot more than they ever had before. I know from my standpoint, I have a lot of freedom now to go out there and do what I...
Okay, excuse me, good.
Sorry, I'm used to...
What have you been used to? What? You can't curse on the air?
Sorry. I'm used to...
The podcast stuff? Michael Cole, of all the people. Cody, maybe. Triple H, maybe. Michael Cole?
Sorry, you almost, Sal, you almost did it the other day.
I did.
Michael.
I almost said the F word the other
you
day.
You almost did. Hey, Michael, I got a question for you. That's funny. How did you think the company handled all the Hulk Hogan stuff? The tribute... The delicate balance of, what was the bad stuff, but 90%+ amazing stuff.
I thought the company did an unreal job with the way that they handled Hulk. Listen, no matter what you think about the man, and obviously he's a human being, nobody's perfect. He had a lot of detractors, especially late in his career. But no matter what you think of the human being, there is no doubt what Hulk Hogan, the character and the icon, did for the professional wrestling industry. Hulk Hogan and Vince McMahon turned professional wrestling from a small regional promotion into a global sports entertainment juggernaut. I would not be sitting at ringside today if it wasn't for Hulk Hogan. And so this man completely changed everything around. I got a lot of flack because I said on ESPN last week that I believed Hulk Hogan was the greatest professional wrestler of all time. I firmly believe that. And I'm not talking about in-ring work. Because he wasn't a great in-ring worker. He was an incredible performer. And none of us in any company in professional wrestling would be in this position today without Hulk Hogan.
Well, I'm just curious. So if you think Hulk's number one, and I don't disagree with that based on the impact, almost like the Babe Ruth of wrestling, Willie Mays, a better athlete, better wrestlers than Hulk, but I get your point and I agree. Who would be number two or three for you? Who did you even have to wrestle within your own mind to make that opinion or take that stance on Hulk being number one?
John Cena. John Cena, to me, is the GOAT because of how long he has done this, what he's done for this company, taking it from a really tough time when he first started in the mid-2000s to becoming a 17-time world champion, which is a record that probably will never be broken again. His longevity and what he's meant to the industry, and even when he's gone away to become a massive movie star and TV star, which he is today, he still comes back and he's given his entire year of his life to our company in his farewell tour. I think John is the greatest of all time.
What's your personal relationship with Hulk?
I knew Hulk very well. Hulk was very, very good to me early in my career. When Hulk came back in the early 2000s, he had a lot of kind words for me. I was green at the time. I was still trying to learn the business. And Hulk, one of the things that he told me, I'll never forget, and this was right before I was going to call his match with Mr. McMahon at WrestleMania in Seattle. I believe it was WrestleMania 19. I went up to him that afternoon to talk to him about the match. And he smiled at me and he goes, "Michael, this is supposed to be fun. Go out there and have fun. Be a fan and just let all the emotions you've ever had in your life for Hulk Hogan and Mr. McMahon come out and you'll do a fine job." And ever since that moment, I've realized I could be putting shingles on a roof in 100-degree weather in Texas for a living. I get paid to do this and paid to have fun, and I appreciate that. And that's one of the great words of wisdom that Hulk gave me.
This is a great perspective. So I want to take it back to something you said earlier. Michael Cole, by the way, with us here, BT and Sound on the Fan, where you, your Met roots and your dad would take you to Shea in the 70s, Dave Kingman, Mazzilli, horrible Met teams, but you were there. Did you go to Shea? Because I don't remember ever seeing this at Yankee Stadium, old footage, but Shea used to get a lot of Andre the Giant, the Wild Samoans, Captain Lou, Hulk Hogan early, some others. Did you go watch wrestling at Shea as well or no?
No, I never saw any wrestling at Shea, but it was pretty cool later on in my career when I first started here. And then, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, we actually had to revoice a lot of those matches so that we can put them into our archives. Showdown at Shea, particular moments like that. So I actually lended my voice to that, which was pretty cool. And I know like the hardcore fans didn't like it because Michael Cole wasn't around at the time. But it was pretty cool for me as a fan to be able to call that stuff, because that's when I got into professional wrestling. I remember in the late 70s as a kid, sitting up till midnight on a Saturday night with my grandmother in upstate New York to watch Channel 9. Watch Channel 9, right? Oh, yeah, and that, and that's where I started my wrestling fandom. And, you know, I grew up with the superstar Billy Grahams and the Bob Backlunds and all those guys.
Morocco.
Yeah, Don Morocco, Snuka.
Jeff Snook was the man. I was telling Sal the day that Hulk died, or shortly thereafter, and Sal was off, so I was telling the story to the audience, and then eventually I told Sal, where when it starts, same with my grandma, Italian grandma, Greenpoint, and back then, they would go to these little tiny parishes in Brooklyn, all Queens, and like Bruno would show up, and all the stars would show up in front of like 600-700 people in a little teeny tiny CYO gym. That's how it started.
The Albany Avenue Armory, I'll never forget, is where they did a lot of their TV tapings back in the day. And you're right. These larger-than-life guys, Bruno Sammartino, a dude who set a record for selling out Madison Square Garden 200-something times, was playing in front of 400 people at a CYO gym. It's such a different world today. I mean, we're going to be in front of probably 100,000 people over the weekend at MetLife Stadium for SummerSlam. And then we're going to Paris at the end of the month where we're going to play in front of 50,000 people over two nights. So it's pretty incredible what this place has become.
You have a favorite pairing of announcers growing up? Like for me, Monsoon Heenan or Monsoon Jesse, Vince Jesse. Did you have anybody that inspired you or a favorite back then?
Vince and Jesse. I loved listening to Vince. Even before I started here, JR and the King. They were really the Attitude Era for me, and I had just started in the company, so obviously I watched those guys work each and every week, and the pairing of those two guys was absolutely incredible. And then for me, I've had a lot of great partners over the years. You know, JBL was a great one, Corey Graves, Pat McAfee, but to me, my favorite partner of all time was Taz. Taz and I really, took over SmackDown under the tutelage of Paul Heyman, and we became the best announced team in the business there for a few years. So Taz has always been my number one.
You know, he used to work here at the network. Yeah, he's a little nuts, I heard.
Yep.
Taz is a good guy. I know. Right down the hole. He's a good guy. He's good, though.
He's emotional.
I like him. He's like a stronger version of Sal.
Yeah, exactly. did you ever want to get into sports broadcasting?
I did. So I went to Syracuse University.
Of course.
Went to the Newhouse School. And in fact, one of my great friends actually lived next door to me was Mike Tirico in my graduating class. Yeah. So, I called all the Syracuse football and basketball, lacrosse games back in the day. But over the summer I was doing news. So I actually got, when I graduated, I actually got a job in news, and I worked news for 8 years. So I worked out of Houston for CBS Radio. I actually worked at, WCBS 880
right
before it closed down, and back in the mid-90s. I wanted to get some television experience because I was doing radio at the time. So Todd Pettengill, who used to be a DJ here in New York, he was working at WWE, and he said, hey, listen, we need to audition an announcer. So I went in and did the audition and got the job, and I said, oh, I'll be here for 2 years, get some TV experience, go back to news. 28 years later, I'm still here.
They bought the house.
Yeah,
you know? The time at Syracuse, this isn't so much about wrestling, but what year did you get out?
I graduated in 88.
Dude, so you're talking basically when you started the apex of the Big East.
Oh,
Rolly, Louie, John Thompson. Are you kidding me?
Dude, so I was able to call the NCAA finals when
Keith Smart
killed us.
Yep.
And I called that. I was able to call the Sugar Bowl the year that we went undefeated. Syracuse football, and then Pat Dye of Auburn decided to kick a field goal, and we ended up in a tie, which perhaps cost us the national championship. So I was there for all that. I was there for so many great years at Syracuse, so I got pretty lucky in my time there.
All right, Michael. Well, we appreciate you stopping. And CBT, legit sports fan right there.
Awesome. Good stuff, Mike. Yeah, really.
We got to get the Mets. What do you think here? Final word. Where do the Mets end up? You think they can go all the way?
I think they win the division.
And then anything happens?
So, listen, in the playoffs, it becomes a bullpen game. The moves that Stearns makes, as long as we can get Lindor and Pete hitting again, I think we go to the World Series.
I loved it! There you go, BT. I agree, by the way. I'm not worried about Soto, Lindor, and Pete.
Yep.
Those two guys get going to the postseason, that'll be the key. Michael, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you.
Make sure you check it out. We'll be there Saturday, Sunday, MetLife Stadium, the first ever two-night SummerSlam taking place this Saturday, Sunday at MetLife in New Jersey. The event streams live in the U.S. exclusively on Peacock beginning at 6 p.m. Eastern Time and is available internationally on Netflix. Thank you to Michael Cole. We'll come back, reset, get you caught up on everything with the trade deadline, our opinions there.